This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. It's a tough sell to convince McLean County farmers to move acreage into wetland.
If you were going to take ground out of production, not only does this conservation practice need to pay for itself, it also needs to make a lot of sense for the farmer because we do have such good soils.
Hear about a Nature Conservancy study of the Mackinac River watershed, plus a consumer advocacy group says State Farm and other insurers haven't given enough back to ratepayers for driving less during the pandemic, and someone should make them do it. Methamphetamine cases helped McLean County set a new record for drug felony filings last year. And hear about the new therapy with the shorthand name BAM that's helping victims of COVID-19. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. The Bloomington Normal NAACP says the police response to the insurrection led by pro-Trump extremists shows the double standard that exists in law enforcement. Chapter President Linda Foster says African Americans have been tear-gassed, water-hosed, and even threatened with dogs for lesser offenses.
As you look at the different types of responses, it is so unevenly dispatched.
A mob stormed the U.S. Capitol and quickly overwhelmed security in the riot. More than a dozen police were injured. Police arrested more than 50 people. Foster says the incident serves as another wake-up call that white privilege must be dismantled. A Republican Illinois congressman has called for the removal of President Trump from office. In a video statement posted to his Twitter feed, 16th District Representative Adam Kinzinger called on those closest to the president to invoke Section 4 of the 25th Amendment and declare that the president is unable to do his job.
All indications are that the president has become unmoored, not just from his duty, nor even his oath, but from reality itself. It is for this reason that I call for the Vice President and members of the Cabinet to ensure the next few weeks are safe for the American people and that we have a sane captain of the ship.
Kinzinger says President Trump did not do enough to denounce the violence at the Capitol. He also says the president, quote, invoked and inflamed passions that only gave fuel to the insurrection that we saw here. The McLean County Health Department confirms 50 new COVID-19 cases as the county's testing positivity rate dropped to its lowest level in more than a week. The county's seven-day testing positivity rate is now 8.8%. The number of hospitalizations continues to break records. There are now 40 McLean County residents hospitalized with COVID-19, up one from the day before. Hospitalizations have increased every day this week. At the same time, hospital bed capacity tightened. The number of available intensive care beds and total beds dropped by about 10%. McLean County's active caseload is the lowest since early November. That number is 971, with 931 people isolating at home. Just because COVID-19 vaccines are available to healthcare workers doesn't mean they're taking them. Ryan Taylor, assistant director of Green Tree Pharmacy, handles pharmacy services for about 50 Heritage Health senior facilities. Taylor says so far, only about 65% of Heritage staff got the shot. He says some already had COVID and think natural antibodies are enough.
Some, you know, have more radical thinking in terms of concerns that the vaccine may interact directly with their DNA, or, you know, they just don't trust the government. Certainly, you know, some even take a political stance, I think, with the vaccine.
Taylor says Heritage is working to better educate staff about vaccines. He says 90% of Heritage residents have been vaccinated. The McLean County Nursing Home Administrator disputes data which show 11 people have died of COVID at the facility. Terry Edens tells county board members the county-run home in Normal has had only 6 COVID deaths. She says 8 others who died had other factors which led to their deaths.
The numbers that are coming out, I don't know, you know, every day I see the newspaper and every day I hear the news and every day I come back in here and say, where are they getting their numbers? You know, are we not counting right? Are we not doing this right?
WGLT reports COVID data. The Illinois Department of Public Health updates weekly on long-term facility outbreaks. 2 other nursing home administrators in the county say the state's data on their facilities is generally reliable. County administration denied WGLT's request for an interview. House Republicans are again demanding answers from the Illinois Department of Employment Security over slow processing of unemployment benefits. The agency has also been plagued with complaints about fraudsters applying for benefits using personal information stolen from Illinois residents. Lawmakers for months have been inundated by complaints from Illinoisans who received bills from the state demanding repayment of unemployment benefits they never requested or received. Representative Mike Marin of Fithian says small businesses are also being targeted by unemployment fraud.
The dollar figures in these letters were staggering. Most repayment demands came with a deadline of only a few short weeks, with the added threat of penalties and interest for failure to pay.
The GOP legislators claim IDES has been unresponsive to questions for months. Marin says it took live streaming on Facebook 2 days in a row while standing outside the agency's Springfield office before he could get a meeting with the IDES director. Republicans want to hash out solutions in a committee hearing when the legislature meets for a so-called lame duck session beginning Friday. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. With a practice featuring 5 doctors, including 2 who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. The rise in methamphetamine cases continued its multi-year surge in 2020. Felony drug cases in McLean County rose by 32% last year to a record high, though the 5-year trend is not as stark as the 1-year jump. State's Attorney Don Knapp says a lot of the increase came from methamphetamine offenses.
Judge Yoder has said, I've seen more meth cases in the last year in my courtroom than I did the 12 years I was state's attorney.
Prosecutors say the steep rise in meth cases began 2 years ago. Meth cases were 40% of all drug felonies last year in McLean County. 5 years ago, the figure was 10%.
We've seen an amazing amount of meth, and it's no mystery that the cartels who had distribution networks for cannabis have changed up and started flooding markets with methamphetamine that is of a purer quality.
Knapp says the rural home meth lab industry that created low-grade crank has given way to crystal meth.
We haven't seen meth labs like you were accustomed to seeing because of this methamphetamine coming in from other sources.
Most meth comes from suppliers outside the state, and Assistant State's Attorney Jeff Forbes says sometimes local people even go to other states, such as Missouri or Arizona, where prices are lower and supply higher, and bring it back. There were nearly 200 meth cases in McLean County last year out of an overall total of 492 drug felonies. For comparison's sake, there were more meth cases last year than there were total drug felonies in the county in 2001. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A new antibody treatment OSF Healthcare has been using for older and other high-risk COVID patients has shown promising results. Vice President of Clinical Specialty Services Dr. Brian Curtis tells Eric Stock OSF has given the monoclonal immunotherapy infusion bamlanivimab, or BAM for short, to about 600 patients that had COVID symptoms. 5% of those patients ended up in the hospital.
When you look at the over 65, if you look at CDC, you know, admission rates for COVID positive patients over 65, you know, runs probably 12-13%. And if you get over 85, actually you get over 75 and you're looking at about a 15% admission rate, you know. And so, again, it was a small study, but, you know, within that 600 patients, you would think you would have more admissions than that, COVID positive, better symptomatic. And so we anticipated that from the data that for every 10 patients that we would treat, we would prevent one admission. And so we would anticipate that we would prevent 60 admissions throughout the system, which really kind of supports the data. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does seem to be. So you're looking at, you've cut what you would typically expect by close to 10%. So that's about 1 in 10. Is that, does that provide some optimism for this treatment in the long term?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, again, it's a small sample. You know, the optimism really, I think, is going to, this is a treatment option for a very select patient population. And again, we are infusing some people under 65 if they have health conditions, but a majority of them are over 65. And so really, it does give us some hope, but really the optimism is really around the vaccine right now. Is like anything else, you know, anything that we can use to prevent somebody from getting a disease, we're going to be better off than treating them once they have a disease process. And so prevention is always the best bet.
Would there be an expectation that the scale could be broadened a bit, that more people could be given this treatment? I know you said there are some under 65 with other conditions that were given it, but could it be broadened further?
What the studies with BAM infusions have shown will be is that if patients that are hospitalized or don't meet the indicate, particularly around people that are hospitalized and receive BAM, they actually do worse than people that do not receive BAM. And so the studies have really kind of demonstrated that. So hospitalization, you should not receive BAM. And I don't think that's going to change. In regards to, you know, moving it off of to people that don't have risk factors for hospitalization, I don't think that we would look at that, because really, if you look at the emergency use authorization around BAM, it was all around preventing hospitalization. And that was the whole premise behind it. And that's the premise for us to be given it, is to prevent hospitalization of patients. And so, you know, that's our primary endpoint. And so really giving it to somebody that doesn't have a risk for being hospitalized, your number needed to treat just increases so much that it really becomes an unbeneficial medication, at least that we're seeing at this point. And then so a young, you know, healthy 28-year-old that has, you know, COVID, you know, probably won't receive a lot of benefit from it.
And so to help us understand, taking the numbers and putting them into a concept that people can visualize, reducing the number of, or the percentage of likely hospitalizations from 12-ish percent to 5%, how much of a difference does that make at a time when many hospitals are at or near capacity on a daily basis?
You know, if you start looking at patients that are admitted with COVID to the hospital, they tend to be in the hospital longer than an ordinary person would be in the hospital. And so you're looking at an extended hospital length of stay. And if you go into the intensive care unit, you even have a longer stay. And if you end up on a ventilator, it even increases that stay. And so it actually serves two points. One, being hospitalized, we know because you're having a more serious COVID infection increases mortality risk. We know that. And so any hospitalization we can prevent actually opens up a bed for somebody else that may or may not have COVID. And so really, any little bit helps.
That was Dr. Brian Curtis of OSF Healthcare with Eric Stock. Hospital capacity in Bloomington Normal has improved in the last week, but McLean County's total of COVID-related hospitalizations is at an all-time high. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Wetland construction along the Mackinac River makes a huge difference in restoring water systems from McLean County all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. But the conservation group working to make that happen faces issues with funding and getting landowners on board. Dana Vollmer talked to the Nature Conservancy's Maria Lemke and Krista Kirkham about a recent released study on conservation efforts near Bloomington.
The Mackinac River watershed is, you know, right there near Bloomington, and the Conservancy's been working in this watershed for over 25 years now, actually. And it was chosen as a priority site for the Conservancy because it is a really high quality river system, has a lot of really great quality habitat for, you know, aquatic and terrestrial species. And it has a lot of fish and mussel species in it, a lot of diversity. It is highly agricultural, at especially kind of the upper half of the watershed. And so that's where we have been focusing a lot, is working with the agricultural community, partners, landowners, farmers, to try to reduce specifically nitrogen and phosphorus runoff from agriculture into the river. And it's not just for the river watershed itself, because water, you know, what keeps on flowing downstream. So the Mackinac River flows into the Illinois River and then on into the Mississippi River and down to the Gulf of Mexico. So there's some local reasons for, you know, trying to reduce nutrient runoff, like drinking water, and also, you know, really regional and national reasons for doing that. That's kind of the big picture. I don't know, Krista, if you want to add anything to that.
No, that was really good. I'll just throw in that, you know, when we talk about the watershed work in the Mackinac, it's not unique to many other watersheds within Illinois. You know, we there's high nutrient issues in many of our watersheds in the Midwest, honestly. And whether that's urban contributions or agriculture, you know, we all have a role to play in trying to reduce nutrients that are going to the Gulf of Mexico.
And so what was this five-year study looking at?
The big goals were, on the science side, were to figure out how well constructed wetlands work in reducing nitrogen and phosphorus values. We were also looking also a lot on the economics of this. You know, what does it really take to get these in to the watershed? So it's really, you know, what does it take at scale within the watershed to see changes at that watershed scale? But also, what does it mean for the farmer? You know, what are all the small details coming in to make this viable financially for them as well? So that was kind of a side bonus, which is really what this paper was about. All these things that we learned going through this process with the producers and learning where the things went smoothly and where things really didn't.
What did you kind of learn from that? What will it take to get farmers on board?
Yeah, I'll take a stab. So I worked pretty closely with a handful of producers on this. And so myself and Jackie Kraft with the McLean County Soil and Water District worked. And she definitely had the lion's share of this, but it was interesting to learn all the different steps involved that would, and every single producer is different on what their concerns are and what their farm operation is too, and what's available also on their farm. You know, they may have the interest, but maybe their soil types were right, or maybe it was a perfect site, but they're not interested. You know, there's a lot of different ways to go about it. And living here in Central Illinois, you know, we have some of the most productive farm grounds in the state, if not definitely the nation. Very, very good. So it's really kind of going around that concept of, like, you know, if you were going to take ground out of production, you know, it's a hard concept to get around, because we do have such good soils. And so not only does this conservation practice need to pay for itself, it also needs to make a lot of sense for the farmer.
And so what is the ultimate goal here? Do we need every farm along the Mackinac to have a wetland for this to work? What's feasible to see from a project like this?
We're not asking or ever expect every landowner to put a wetland in, and we don't need that. Illinois has a nutrient loss reduction strategy plan that was released in 2015. And Illinois is one of several states in the Mississippi River Basin that were mandated to put together a nutrient loss reduction strategy. And wetlands is one of the practices that are included in that strategy to reach the ultimate goal of 45% reduction of nitrogen and total phosphorus from the state. That's the ultimate goal. You know, we've been monitoring how well these wetlands work and the variability in how well they work for nitrogen and phosphorus removal. And so we're hoping that, you know, the data that we're collecting and analyzing and putting out there in these publications will be useful to reaching, you know, the goals that the state has already set for nutrient loss. And so, yeah, they're expensive to put in. We don't need everyone to do it. But if we could get in wetlands in the right places, we think they could be extremely effective.
That's the Nature Conservancy's Maria Lemke and Krista Kirkham speaking with Dana Vollmer. For more on wetland construction efforts on the Mackinac River watershed, go to WGLT.org. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media. I'm Charlie Schlenker. People drove a lot less last year. That meant fewer crashes and fewer insurance claims. So auto insurers like State Farm sent back billions in premium refunds and rate cuts to their customers. Now, a consumer advocacy group is calling for another round of relief. And Michael DeLong from the Consumer Federation of America tells Ryan Denham this time it should not be optional.
Auto insurance companies should send back more in premium refunds to consumers because they are making vast profits through no actions of their own due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It's caused driving and crashes and auto insurance claims to decline way down due to various stay-at-home orders, various business closures, people working from home, people having lost their jobs. Consumers are being charged insurance rates that are excessive and became excessive as soon as the pandemic hit. They're based on 2019 data instead of what consumers are currently doing, and they're driving a lot less. It's unfair, rates are excessive, and insurance departments should take action to require this.
So last year, how much premium did insurers give back? I seem to recall State Farm, which is the company in our backyard, said it was planning to do about 25% premium refunds plus some rate cuts. Generally speaking, though, what did everybody give back?
The average premium relief that an insurer gave back was about 15% for 2 months. Most of them did it for, say, like April or May. Some insurers gave back a little more, say like 20%. Some insurers gave back less, like 10%. A couple only gave back, like, say, $50, and a couple gave nothing at all. While that was a good start, CFA did a study of the decline in miles driven and crashes. We used data from four states, Colorado, Maryland, Massachusetts, and Texas, which have the data that's readily available, although there's a bit of a time lag for it all to be compiled. And we found that while those relief things were good, they were inadequate. The decline was so big that realistically consumers should have gotten 30% premium refunds because that would have better accounted for the big decline in crashes and miles traveled.
It seems like you're of the opinion that state insurance commissioners or state insurance departments should actually be requiring this in some way versus sort of a more voluntary approach, which is, I think, what happened last year. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, we think that state insurance commissioners should require premium refunds. Right now, state insurance commissioners have a responsibility. It's in all of their codes to require that insurance not be excessive, unfairly discriminatory, and only four insurance commissioners required premium refunds and made them mandatory. They were California, New Jersey, New Mexico, and Michigan.
Do the other 46 have statutory power to do that, to require something like that?
Yes, they do. States have broad power under their codes to regulate insurance. Regulating insurance is mostly a state matter. And in all of them, they have the requirement that insurance isn't supposed to be excessive. Some of the states that are not the four ones that have made it mandatory have issued bulletins encouraging premium refunds. But like they've said, we encourage auto insurers and other insurers to look at premiums and rates and reset them if things have changed due to the pandemic. But none of them have required it.
You know, State Farm is based here in Bloomington, and they're sort of interesting. They are privately held. They're not publicly traded like some of their competitors. Is there anything unique or notable about State Farm's approach on this stuff thus far versus a Progressive, a Geico, an Allstate, some of the other bigger players, or are they all pretty much on the same page to date?
Regarding premium refunds, State Farm is interesting in that they were somewhat more generous in their givebacks in the spring. As I said before, the average giveback from an auto insurer's was about 15%. State Farm was a bit more generous in that they gave back 25% for part of the month of March and April. And they also said that after this initial give back, they would be working to reduce auto insurance rates in every state by about 11%. That's something, and that's helpful to consumers, but we still think that it's not enough. There need to be more refunds, especially because, consumers are hurting so much during this time.
You know, this episode with the pandemic and what it meant for auto insurance, do you think it's going to kind of speed up the movement toward telemetry and, you know, technology in vehicles that, you know, can actually track the way you drive and how often you drive? And obviously there's some of that going on right now in the industry. Consumers are seeing a little bit of that, but wouldn't that kind of solve the problem? Or do you guys have concerns about sort of the privacy side of that and what it could mean for consumers?
It might speed up the progress toward telematics. And this area that CFA has actually been looking at, it has great promise. For instance, there is the possibility that someone could calculate someone's auto insurance based on how much they drive, which is the most reliable measure indicator of how likely someone is to get into an accident. The problem is that while these technologies have great promise, they also have substantial problems. For instance, there are concerns about what kind of data is going to be collected. CFA has been researching this and is actually working on some studies. And we want to make sure that this data is actually used to help consumers, that it's used to lower auto insurance costs instead of increasing them, that the data is, for instance, not sold without people's knowledge to third parties that could use it for perhaps nefarious purposes.
That's Michael DeLong from the Consumer Federation of America speaking with Ryan Denham. State Farm gave back over $4 billion in premium refunds and rate cuts last year. It says driving and claims have increased, although rates remain below pre-COVID levels. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.